From the National Broadcasting Company newsroom, a special report, Algeria Troubled Freedom. Here is NBC's Merrill Muller.
A truce without peace, a freedom without authority. Here is the gunfire crucible of a new nation, Algeria.
The news department of the National Broadcasting Company presents a documentary of the latest nation to win independence. For that report and the background of the Algerian struggle, here is Merrill Muller.
132 years of French rule in its last North African possession of Algeria ended Sunday. A ceasefire was signed on the shores of Lake Geneva at Evian, France, that ended the Algerian nationalist rebellion, an uprising that became a seven-year war, costing a quarter of a million lives and $20 billion. The ink was hardly dry on the paper before the two principals who had guided France and Algeria to a compromise solution took to the radio to proclaim the result. Without a clear-cut victory to either, yet with honor and danger to both, President Charles de Gaulle of France and Premier Ben Youssef Ben Kaida of Algeria found common ground in pledging a cooperative future. NBC correspondent Leon Pearson translates the French and Arabic.
La conclusion du cessez-le-feu en Algérie.
The voice of President de Gaulle telling the French people that the ceasefire has been achieved in Algeria at last, and saying that the prospect which presents itself is one for cooperation, an independent Algeria cooperating directly with France. Throughout the address, he speaks of the need of the Algerians for modern progress and the number of Algerians living in France. That is, cooperation must continue. Algerian rebel Premier Ben Kaida relayed the news by the Tunisian radio to the Algerian troops in Tunisia and also in Algeria, saying that a ceasefire has been achieved after years of trial and suffering. His voice, it was carried likewise to Algerian forces on the western side, that is, in Morocco.
Two men, both raised in the humanitarian and revolutionary principles that France gave to the world, thus opened the first page of history for a new nation, independent Algeria. It is a land of strange contrasts. Heavily exploited, it has also been strongly developed. Generally poor, it has valuable resources. Almost illiterate, it is wealthy in numerous French-trained political leaders. Algeria has the means to govern itself, starting sometime this summer, provided the end of the Algerian revolution is not the beginning of a new French revolution. It's ironic that it took the French 40 years to conquer the Arab Berber tribes who roamed Algeria at the turn of the 19th century. The French victory came because of disunity among the tribes. Now it is disunity among the French that threatens total destruction. Algeria is the land of the Berbers, but its progress is the mark of France. From a wasteland of poverty and disease, unable to support the 3 million people who lived in tents and mud villages, Algeria has been transformed into a modern state. 1 million Frenchmen moved in or were born on Algeria's coastal strip, transplanting the culture, the industry, and the image of their homeland. These French colonists had to develop both the hinterland and the natives. They were called colons, these Frenchmen, but Algeria, though across the Mediterranean, was not a colony. It is and was a department, a province of metropolitan France. Gleaming cities sprang up. Roads and railroads reached out. Agricultural expansion brought industry and exploration of natural resources. Hand in hand with this wealth went health programs, hospitals, schools, training programs for the Berbers. Their population exploded into almost 10 million. The integration of the two races, Arab and Caucasian, always heavily favored the French. Yet each year, a small group of young Arabs graduated with honors from more and higher places of learning. And as Algeria grew, at about the time Mussolini reached for a similar prize in Ethiopia, a group of young students named Ferhat Abbas, Ben Youssef Ben Kaida, Ben Bella, Saeed Alab, and Mohamed Yazid began to practice the revolutionary theories learned in French literature and French history. Today, those students are the leaders of the Algerian provisional government. Almost all were jailed in their rise to political power. Almost all worked at one time or another from underground. All have been threatened with their life. All at one time or another wanted bitter, violent solutions to their problem. Some studied in Russia or Red China, and some of these returned to denounce the aid of communism. All studied at the socialist font in France. And it is democratic socialism that is probably the political stamp of their regime, though that stamp has been slow in reaching maturity, just as their underground rebellion grew at an agonizing pace. Finally, however, came open warfare, and NBC correspondent John Rich in Paris remembers the day.
Early in the morning of November 1st, 1954, a rickety bus jammed with Muslims bumped along the mountain highway close to the village of Arras in the rugged Oraz Mountains of eastern Algeria. A group of men with hunting rifles stepped into the road and waved the driver to a halt. "Send out the Frenchmen," they shouted. Guy Monneret, a French schoolteacher, and his wife, the only Europeans on the bus, stepped into the road. They were massacred. 7.5 years of savage, bloody warfare in Algeria had begun. This week, as word of the ceasefire began to spread into the remote regions of the country, André Potard of the French newspaper Le Monde took a trip into the Oraz Mountains, a place where for years no Frenchman has been safe without heavy protection from armed soldiers. "The war has left its mark," he says, "visible traces all along the road where Guy Monneret and his wife were murdered, burned automobiles pushed into the ditches, telegraph poles knocked over, power lines down, schools and houses devastated, the fields strung with rusting barbed wire, making them look even more hostile and desolate." He passed through a village almost abandoned. Water from the mountain stream raced noisily through the open gutters in the gardens of the houses. Here and at other such remote hamlets will come another test of the ceasefire, to prove whether wartime hatreds can be forgotten or will lead to more bloodshed. The Le Monde reporter also uncovered additional information about that incident on the bus which heralded the start of the war. The chauffeur, the bus driver who stopped at the command of the men with the rifles, is still there, still driving a bus across the barren mountainside. This is John Rich, NBC News, Paris.
The chauffeur is the same, but much more than the scene has changed. The rebellion has changed. There is no peace. And the NBC correspondent now in Algeria explains the difference. Here is Joseph Michaels from Algiers.
In most parts of the world, it is understood that the word ceasefire means stop shooting. This battle-ridden country has never seen as much bombing, killing, and just plain destruction as it has since the ceasefire was proclaimed. And the outlook is for still worse to come. The vast majority of the people, 9 out of 10 million, are Muslims, but the people who control the complex mechanisms that make a modern society function are almost all Europeans and are secret army members or supporters to a man. This means that when the secret army wants the mechanism to stop, it comes to a halt abruptly, as it did on the day after the ceasefire, as it did in many areas here again today. The thinking is simple, even if the results are bloody. The secret army wants Algeria to remain a province of France, though it says it is prepared to see the Muslims acquire the equality they have never had previously. To reach its goal, it will, if possible, kill all who disagree, whatever their race, and will reduce the country to chaos. This is what is happening here at the moment. Despite the Evian Agreement, there is a new war here in Algeria, and though the odds are against them in the final analysis, so far it is the OAS, the gunmen of the secret army, who are winning it. Joseph Michaels, NBC News, Algiers.
The supreme irony of this story is that the man who is giving independence to Algeria must now fight the very Frenchman who returned him to political power. Against the background of colonial defeats elsewhere, and in the face of the growing Algerian rebellion, it was the French army, urged on by the colons, who issued the cry in Algeria for de Gaulle. Army commanders and whole regiments revolted against the Fourth Republic's handling of the Algerian situation. They set up a military administration in the Mediterranean and demanded a change in Paris. The Fourth Republic was almost dead when de Gaulle held an historic news conference. NBC's chief European correspondent, Joseph C. Harsh, was there to cover it.
General Charles de Gaulle has just finished his historic news conference here in Paris. He has answered about 6 questions and announced at the end that he was leaving to return to his villa 150 miles east of Paris. In his answers to questions, he has indicated strongly that he wants to return to power, but he thinks that he can only do this by a procedure which does not alienate everybody. He seems to want to come back to power by a sort of national demand. He has just refused to accept the definition of fascist for the men who have taken control in Algeria. He advocates in his news conference primarily some solution which offers a way of holding together the people of France and the army in Algeria. But he has not given any specific definition of how this is to be achieved other than the General de Gaulle formula of de Gaulle to power. This is Joseph C. Harsh of NBC News in Paris.
A Fifth Republic was born and de Gaulle toured Algeria. Arabs and Frenchmen, the military and the civil service, gathered around him, each reading its own definition into de Gaulle's intentions. But on his return to France, de Gaulle issued a fateful phrase, self-determination. General Massu's paratroopers and the Foreign Legion, both soon to be disbanded, rose again. This time it was the General's Mutiny, led by Salan and Charles. Their revolt threw France into a new panic, and that crisis, too, was covered by NBC's John Rich in Paris.
The situation for President de Gaulle has definitely worsened. The army revolt in Algeria has spread, and the dissidents seem to be gaining strength. Here in Paris, right-wing terrorists have become bolder. In the last 24 hours, five plastic bombs have exploded, one of them in the luggage room at Orly Airfield. One man was killed. The rebelling soldiers in Algeria yesterday morning held only Algiers. Today, they definitely have Oran, the second largest city, and their radio claims that they control Constantine and Mostaganem, as well as all the airfields in Algeria. The government here insists, however, that the bulk of the troops are loyal to de Gaulle. President de Gaulle appears preparing to assume even more powers than the state of emergency declared yesterday gave him. In a series of conferences today, he's been taking the necessary legal steps. The police are on full alert. They continue rounding up known rightists. General Jacques Four, implicated in two previous plots, has been arrested. But Algiers Radio says General Salan, one of the leaders of the present revolt, has escaped confinement in Spain and has reached Algiers. This is John Rich, NBC News, Paris.
Total success, however, was short-lived for the mutineers. The loyal elements of the French army forced them out and underground. The Organisation de l'Armée Secrète was born, the secret army organization that threatens Algeria and de Gaulle again tonight. Yet the charge is made by some Arabs that the OAS lives only by de Gaulle's sufferance. We get that report from John Cooley, NBC News, Tunis.
A couple of nights ago, by a campfire out in the mud and rain on the border between Tunisia and Algeria, a Tunisian I know chatted about the ceasefire with two Algerian officers of the ALN. The letters ALN stand for Algerian Liberation Army. This is the Algerian name for the 35,000-man rebel force, which fought 500,000 French troops to a stalemate without ever winning a real victory. These soldiers are now a main key to whether peace will come to Algeria or whether the Evian Agreement is to remain a scrap of paper. My friend asked the two ALN officers, what about the secret army organization, the OAS? What can be done about the Europeans who are plunging Algeria's cities into civil strife? The answer was short and to the point. The secret army is the French army, the Algerians told him. Without the French army, it could never get arms, equipment, or intelligence information. My friend then reminded them that the peace agreements provide for the French army to stay on for 3 years after Algerian independence. One Algerian officer spoke up. All I know, he said, is that de Gaulle had better take care of the secret army, or we'll do it for him. The stark truth is that such action would break the truce. The French army would be dragged, perhaps against its will, into fighting against the Muslims, which is what the OAS wants. This, in turn, would lead the Algerians to call for help to the only quarter they feel they can count on to send it, the communist bloc. But this would drag the East-West struggle into North Africa, and it was very largely to avoid this that the Algerians signed the Evian Treaty. This is one more reason, and a compelling one, why they must try cooperation with de Gaulle first. This is John Cooley, NBC News in Tunis.
It's doubtful the Algerians will ask for communist aid because the security of the new state will rest in the hands of a well-trained, well-equipped, and well-disciplined Arab force. It'll be made up of 35,000 men now in the ranks of the Algerian rebel army, as well as some 60,000 Arab soldiers now serving in French uniform. The ceasefire agreement calls for High Commissioner Fouché of France, dispatched to Algeria yesterday, to organize the new security army. He has the help of the new 12-man Provisional Executive Council. It is to rule Algeria until elections this summer. The OAS is a noisy and dangerous thing now, but it must realize it faces extinction and can only bring death, injury, and sorrow to the French families from which it demands support. By contrast, those families have the choice over the next 3 years of becoming Algerian citizens with equal rights and holding their property they possess, or they can move to France with compensation for their losses. The decision is not entirely theirs. France and de Gaulle will help them make it. In the referendum, he wants April 8th to approve his ceasefire agreement. But 3 weeks is time for much trouble in the broiling cauldron of the French Parliament, surrounded by the terrorism of the underground's plastic bomb squads. Here's the way it looks in Paris tonight to NBC newsman John Rich.
Charles de Gaulle has taken just a couple of months short of 4 years to bring the Algerian war to an end. Ironically, his greatest obstacle has been Frenchmen instead of the Algerian rebels who were supposed to be the real enemy. Tragically enough, the ceasefire has not yet put an end to the bloodshed. French soldiers today are cooperating with the FLN rebels, but in the Algerian cities, they're fighting skirmishes with the European settlers, the very people the army went there to protect. This paradox hardly surprises those who have closely followed the tragic progress of the Algerian drama. It has divided Frenchmen and torn at the fabric of this French nation like no other event in this century. The secret negotiations at Lake Geneva finally brought a ceasefire agreement last Sunday, and as a result, the world breathes easier. President de Gaulle's supporters praise him for having moved slowly, cautiously, but relentlessly toward his goal, getting a ceasefire without touching off another uprising which might have brought down his government. Others, however, argue that he went too slowly and consequently permitted the growth of a new danger, the secret army, behind which the European settlers have been able to channel their bitterness and frustration. In the referendum of April 8th, de Gaulle's policies will undoubtedly be supported by a solid majority of the French people. It has been a long road, and the end is in sight. Certainly nobody but de Gaulle could have held the French nation together and come this far. But a danger still remains, and the government knows it. That's why there are still anti-aircraft guns atop Paris buildings, why additional riot troops are being sent to the island of Corsica. The secret army is out to ruin the ceasefire, and the French army has still not made unmistakably clear where it stands. And what it does in the coming showdown will be decisive. Any misstep by President de Gaulle, even at this late date, could still be fatal. This is John Rich, NBC News, Paris.
While France goes to the polls in April, Algeria will wait, its transitional executive trying to rule in chaos, and its new political leaders, now in Rabat, Morocco, trying to reorganize the cabinet. Algeria itself goes to the polls in July, both in a referendum and a parliamentary election. Then it accepts independent sovereignty in close alliance with France. The alliance is not military. Algeria is expected to join the neutral bloc. The alliance will be cultural and economic. The latter is vital. Algeria's budget is only $70 million a year. French trade and aid is worth 10 times that figure, and Algeria can only grow with investment capital. The economic foundation is explained now by Leon Pearson, NBC News.
No matter who wins, they're winning a vast treasure land. For the country as a whole, consider this. Algeria is much larger than France itself. It has a population of a little over 10 million, mostly Muslims. 1 million are Europeans. 80% of these are Frenchmen born in Algeria. The country has 2,700 miles of railroads, 28,000 miles of roads, no less than 50 airports. When I was in Algeria at the time of the army revolt last April, I drove south from the sea into the farm areas and saw the thriving vineyards and orchards bathed in the warm spring sun. One reflection was that if anything like a split between France and Algeria takes place, a lot of Algerians are going to have to increase their consumption of oranges and wine. The Muslims don't drink wine, by the way. These are the two principal exports, and France takes practically the whole lot. Consider this round figure. 81% of all of Algeria's exports go to France. But the richest discovery in Algeria has been deep in the Sahara. The oil wells first, and then the natural gas. In 1960, the production at the principal oil location, which is called Hassi Messaoud, was just under 50 million barrels. And there's now a pipeline to carry this oil to the tankers on the seacoast. There's also a new gas pipeline to carry the gas from Hassi Ramel to the coast. One of the factors that animates so bitterly the Europeans who live in Algeria is that the progress of the past 20 years has been attributable to them, with greater skills, means of investment, by comparison with the Muslims, who are largely illiterate, with meager resources. On the other hand, the French have only lately tried to tap this resource by bringing full social advantage to the Muslims so that they might develop. The enlightened Constantine plan is the best evidence of the new awakening. But it would be disastrous if the new Algerian settlement brought a break between France and Algeria. Leon Pearson, NBC News.
Progress must wait on anarchy and war. For a late report on what's happening at this moment, we go back to Joseph Michaels, NBC News, Algiers.
The real fighting has begun here in the capital of Algeria. It is open war between the secret army and the forces of law and order. The order had already gone out this morning that the police forces, particularly the security companies, who have been most ardent in establishing law and order here, should be attacked, and that the army would at midnight be considered an open enemy if it did not remove itself. The threat has been carried out. From all sides of the city, the firing has been going on, with round after round going up, tracers filling the air, bazookas, all kinds of heavy machine guns, even possibly cannons. The police are firing back, and the firing is general all over the city. It still continues. This is Joseph Michaels, NBC News, Algiers.
The nation's former national anthem, the Marseillaise, will fade off too in the near future as the French tricolore is slowly lowered so that Algeria may take its place along with the new nations of Africa. The marching song of the Algerian rebels that has paced our story of this new state tonight is no longer needed. Soon, as the world hopes, the guns will be used only to salute a new flag and a new anthem, the one you hear now, for an Algeria that has its own leaders pledged to keep it free. This is Merrill Muller, NBC News, New York.
This has been a special NBC News report on Algeria, Troubled Freedom, produced for NBC News by Larry Ganger and William Fitzgerald, directed by Bern Meyer, tape editor Gene Garnes. This program included reports by NBC reporters Leon Pearson, New York, John Rich, Paris, John Cooley, Tunis, Paul Davis, Oran, Joseph Michaels, Algiers, and Joseph C. Harsh, London.